Hello, and welcome to the 50th Planet Destiny podcast. This is the big 5-0. If this podcast was an actual person, you'd be going in to get a prostate exam around this age. Or is that 40?
That's dark, man. Okay. That is dark.
There's so many places you could have
taken
that.
Best to be safe, I guess, right?
Did you know that I got a prostate exam like 6 months ago?
No, I didn't know that, but I'd love to hear
Tell
more
us all
about
I mean,
it.
Hello, You're listeners. This is in fact, a Destiny-related podcast.
Brought to you by Men's Health. Yes.
Check early and check often.
Exactly. This podcast is not sponsored by prostate exams, but...
Should be, though.
Should be, though.
Let's flip the script on that. We are sponsoring prostate exams.
I'm cool with that. Hey, as of right now... There is currently a massive storm system going through my place, so that my power could go out at any moment. So if all of a sudden I just stop talking, that's probably what happened, or I finally got tired of all of you and just rage quit. the salt, by the, we were gonna record this one like live, have all our webcams, but my Logitech C920 webcam refuses to work. It should be avoided. You shouldn't buy it because one out of 5 members of this podcast uses that, and it doesn't work.
Mine works fine.
If you wanted to, could you pick one up at Target?
Oh, Jesus.
You know what? Hold up. I actually bought mine from Target.
I think I did, too. I honestly think I bought mine
I got
at Target.
A deal there. I was like, hey, Target has it cheaper. I'm going there.
It was like 20 bucks off a year ago.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not going to lie.
I think I bought mine about a year ago.
I'm not going to lie. I went to Target to buy mine first, but they were out, so I went to Best Buy. And they're like, oh, Patrick, you're back. And I'm like, not staying. I'm just trying to pick something up. You don't have it later.
Were you wearing a red shirt and khaki pants?
I should have.
Wait, hold up. I probably would have gone to a different Target because I wouldn't want to go back to the one that I had worked at.
The one I worked at was closer. And I want to be very firm in this. This is a Destiny-related podcast, and we'll get to that at some point.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm not going to stop the conversation. You guys keep like making me yell about Target. I'm completely okay with that. I mean, seriously, in this week of Destiny, there hasn't been a lot that's gone on. Fun fact, I had been drinking this Saturday. I don't think I'd blacked out for that long. If you guys happen to tune into Tefty's stream where we played Minecraft, I assaulted Rabby's dog.
And it was great.
May or may not have acquired TNT to blow up his house.
It turns out Drunk Holtzman is the ultimate griefer in Minecraft.
Nice.
So, it was fun times. Yeah. It was definitely fun.
So moving on to more Destiny-related things, the weekly update did come out today, Wednesday, the day that we're recording this, because...
Yearly update.
Yes, the yearly update. I suggest you guys go check that out if you want to see who won the Sparrow Racing League contest. Ends up them saying, hey, yeah, when we start talking again... On January 21st, we'll have more to share.
That good old transparency, baby. Mm-hmm. That's what I enjoy greatly. I love that.
Well, I mean, it is the holidays, right? This did happen last year, too. We talked about it a little bit before the podcast, but I seem to remember this happening last year anyways, that the Dark Below came out. You know, we had a little bit of follow-up. Then the holidays happened, and it was like just absolute silence from Bungie. And a lot of people were actually complaining about Dark Below content at the time.
Yeah, that was...
Drops were crappy, and there was a ton of cheesing going on in the Crota Raid. Mm-hmm. And the Crota Raid was running poorly, if you guys remember. It was the Crota boss fight.
There was a lot of disconnects, right, or something?
Disconnects. He was, warping around.
Yeah. It was a bug-ridden fight because of network issues.
But, you know, it's not that surprising that we get... You know, Bungie deserves breaks. Bungie deserves vacations.
No, they don't. Do you see the lack of content that's right now? They need to... be going complete sweatshop mode, just churning out content right now.
I'll say this in disagreement, Briar, to a certain extent. Uh-huh. I'd say the only difference from then and now is back then we knew there was another DLC coming out, House of Wolves, right? And so we kind of know that the same thing with what's going on with the future of Year 2 content. I think the difference is there's a lot more negativity now, at least coming from the community, with, you know, the microtransactions and like what Year 2 content is going to look like in general. So
I would agree with that.
You know what I mean? It's like the standard vagueness, cool, but I think to a certain respect, it's not going to help them anymore moving forward. So,
you know, they have come out and said that we are going to get more content. We're going to get, a smaller Festival of the Lost type of release, probably in winter, and then another like bigger chunk later.
Right, right.
But they're not going to talk about it right now if they're not going to release it. You know, if they're going, like, if they're literally going into the holiday season, right, they're taking vacations. They're not going to be out there promoting it right now. Mm-hmm. They're going to wait till they come back. So hopefully when they come back, they're going to have a big announcement. Although I would imagine that there's going to be at least a couple of weeks delay even after they come back before mm-hmm. we really start hearing about big stuff.
They may start doing the whispers of what's coming, of the bigger release in spring, and then maybe also like kind of foreshadow what's supposed to be coming in winter. And then like the week after that, we'll start hearing, we'll actually get even more info.
Mm-hmm, you know, the live team seems to be putting out content every 2 months, like once every mm-hmm. 2 months. So February would be the next time for that. Anyway,
yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
So, you know, it kind of adds up.
Well, they did say that it was going to drop in January, but their next update is going to be the 21st. So
it could drop January 21st. Then.
That's possible, right?
I doubt it.
What day is January 21st? It's Thursday, right? So normal weekly update time. So for all we know, there could be like an actual update thing coming on like the 19th of January or something. And then on the 21st, they're like, hey, did you guys enjoy the thing or whatever?
They didn't talk about Festival of Lost before it came out.
No,
right?
It was just I woke up, saw my phone going, hey, there's something weird in the tower, and I go, oh shit, yeah, there's something really weird in the tower.
Same thing with Sparrow Racing too. There was no build up to that.
There was no build up. It was just PlayStation experience. It was PlayStation experience, and then like 2 days later,
yeah, blah. Yeah. And I think that's a problem, man. Really, I do, because I love the content that we're given, especially free content to a certain extent. But when there is sort of this shroud going on in the community where if you just look at the Bungie.net forums, it's really just in a way poisonous, because you see a lot of good and bad reactions from the community right now in terms of like, mm-hmm. hey, this is what we would like to see. And one of the biggest things I think is the fact, like, just show us a roadmap. You don't even have to, you can say, in asterisks, like, there's no guarantee we're going to do this, but at least let people know, give them some head time that this is what to expect. And to be fair, they have done that a little bit, but
Do you think that they're a little bit gun shy from when the year one they put out that they were going to have these DLCs and the expectation, and when then their production line made it difficult for them to produce all that content, and then you had a no raid DLC.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
I mean, I think some of them maybe that they're just trying to avoid that. Right or wrong, I think that might be some of what we're seeing.
Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you really look at it, is you have to ask yourself the question, what's better? Is the surprise me sort of mentality better than the potential failure of delivering a roadmap? I can't say personally what I'm more okay with. I would rather take a roadmap that maybe they don't go 100% on and have the ability to really focus on than what we're currently getting, which is like, oh, here's this, but with no head time on it. That, mm-hmm. But again, I could see there is the flip side with the promising content and failing to deliver is bad. No disagreements mm-hmm. there, but being super vague, especially right now with the lack of DLC for year two, and being vague about what we're going to get in the future, I don't think does Bungie any favors.
Well, okay, and also in year one, we knew Dark Blood was coming, and it came pretty much on time. And then House of Wolves, or DLC number two, was scheduled for March. And then March came by, we didn't hear anything, there was a big upset in the community, but we knew that it was coming. Mm-hmm. And then obviously House of Wolves had a date officially put on it. I think in my opinion, in the feeling of it, I actually don't mind if there's a schedule or a roadmap and then it gets adjusted down the road. It's kind of like these, it's kind of like the Kickstarter projects.
It's like the leak that we saw, honestly, where we saw like that image mm-hmm. and we were like, okay, so here's what we can see. And then we saw that House of Wolves got changed from that release date. And for the most part, I think we're all okay with it. Well,
yeah, we were okay.
We were okay with
it exactly.
Getting changed because it meant the content was going to be better, but I mean, still looking back on House of Wolves, blah blah blah, it was rather underwhelming. Still,
it was, yes, but yeah. But the thing is, I would much rather have that feeling and that kind of knowing instead of being in the dark. Because right now, they're getting better, or they're starting to pull back the blinds a little bit, was saying, yeah, some stuff is coming. But like Wally's talking about, an actual roadmap that if it does get changed, oh, well, it's okay. At least I know that these content drops are coming in whatever type of sizes. So I can get excited about them. Because like nobody wants to be like a kid at Christmas and then find out that Christmas may or may not happen in 3 months.
Yeah.
That sucks. No, that's a weird feeling.
I mean, Pope, to be fair, in your, you know, in the comment that you arise that they are sort of not trigger happy, you know, they're trigger shy on presenting content. They're going to get negative feedback regardless of what they do. You know what I mean? Like, we're not happy either way. You know, like the flip of it being like they present content, they fail to deliver. There's a community outrage because we were promised this content. And now it's there's a community outrage to a certain respect that there isn't enough content or there isn't a roadmap that we can like say, okay, this is what's up.
If they get too transparent, though, they risk losing like the big bang of like a huge announcement in a news cycle.
That's,
right?
That's it's true.
Like
yeah.
They time that stuff out so that, you know, when they announce stuff, it's going to be all over, you know, Kotaku. It's going to be all over every website, and all the YouTubers are going to be talking about it. All the Twitch streamers are going to be talking about it. Like, they time these things pretty specifically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they start to dilute that message, right, is if they start doing it over a longer period of time, then the messages that come later that, you know, they want to really promote might not be as heavily viewed on, you know, Kotaku.com right. as they would like. You know, it might not get to the eyes and the ears of the general gaming public, because Destiny definitely is, you know, aimed at the, you know, the masses. They want to sell a ton of this. They don't want to just sell this to the hardcore gamers. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of their strategy, is that when they do announce stuff, they want it to hit hard and they want it to like be big news that everybody's going
to
be aware of.
Right. But there are side effects to that. And one of the side effects is right now what we're going through, where the very start of this podcast was, there's not much to talk about this week. That is a problem. You know what I mean? That's an issue, especially as we know what the future looks like, or we don't. It's the fundamental thing that I think we're always going to have a conversation about, at least every time I'm on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm not going to take the stance of being like, yeah, Bungie and Activision, they're doing a great job. Like, good for them, man. I'm so happy. Like, I'm never going to take that stance, because as a company, and this should be applied to like anything you do in real life, you shouldn't seek praise. You should seek the criticism.
I really love reading YouTube comments, but not so much anymore. I like to seek valid, actual criticism about the videos that I put out. And when like half the comments are just, they're just attacks, it makes it very difficult to read through all those comments to find those one or two gems that will give me like an actual good idea or a critique or a direction that I could take.
Mm-hmm.
So a big YouTuber, you guys probably heard of him, Boogie. 298.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
He released a video that sort of talked about this on how YouTube and comments work. And you're going to get that all the time. And the problem with YouTube necessarily isn't just the negative comments. It's everything. Because you're going to get so many comments from so many different people telling you to do this, telling you to do that, whether it's like, hey, don't worry about what the haters think, Patrick, or, you know, Patrick, you suck. You're going to get both of them. And mm-hmm. it's, at a certain point, it's just noise. And it doesn't necessarily help you moving forward. What it really is, to some extent, is shitposting from some people out there that literally just get on their keyboards to target you, or just they look at your opinion, they see it as an attack to their own stance, and they can't sort of quantify that there's a difference between someone having an opinion and you having an opinion and trying to find a middle ground, as opposed to being like, Patrick has this opinion about microtransactions, I can't agree with him, so I'm going to go after him and his personal character, instead of looking at his opinion in a more complex way. And that's like the big problem. And that problem is really a microcosm of like just the problem in Destiny 2. Because when people have conversations about their opinions on how to make the game better or why the game is so bad, there's a lot of just nonsense in there that isn't constructive.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a whole generation that's losing their bearings on how to have that civil discourse, right? You can have differing opinions and we can share them. Like, I don't agree with, I mean, Wally, you and I are probably most often rub against each other as far as our opinions are concerned.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, you do.
Definitely. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And so I think that, but then we're also, people always are asking you and me when I'm streaming, hey, are you and Pope, like, do you guys hate each other? And I'm like, no,
No.
Dude,
no.
You guys
should hear it before the show
starts.
We're
friends, and it's something that's absolutely lost in society right now. We are friends, but we have different opinions. Oh my God. Is it possible? Yes, yeah. It absolutely is.
Well, it also extends into the actual multiplayer games as well, because Pope, when we were streaming and helping, having games and getting to the Lighthouse over the weekend, there was a few people that teabagged. And we've gotten into a discussion about it and talking about, would you be at a grocery store, get the last grapefruit, and then make a derogatory term to somebody and be like, guess what? Suck it. I got the last grapefruit.
Depends.
Congratulations.
I don't know.
How good is that grapefruit, man?
You know what I mean? All right. Whatever type of product that you get at the grocery store.
Did they get the last orange and teabag me first, Tufty? Because then, yes, I will teabag him for the grapefruit.
That's right. And I think there's a good space for older gamers. I think there's a lot of people that shy away from, you know, letting younger gamers into their groups. But there's a good gaming network and a bunch of other people who reach out to younger gamers and try to teach them how to, you know, say good game at the end of matches, you know.
I don't think this is an age thing, though, Pope. I mean, there used to be this thing that they used to deliver to your door. It was paper, right? And it had writing on it. They called it a newspaper. It had an editorial section. It had a letters to the editor section.
Right.
And it was like YouTube comments for print.
Sure.
And it was the same thing. There was like literally no difference. Like just people off the wall comments in these things. And these people actually took the time to actually write stuff down and send it in a letter. They had to pay to send that thing with a stamp and everything.
Right.
It's just
off
the wall.
I mean,
bullshit.
There's a difference though. Some of the YouTube
call-in shows are the same way. You get people with just like ridiculous comments, and you know, you're going to get that in any medium at any age.
Well, I think what's different now, Briar, is the instant gratification of it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that brings it down another level, right? Where you had to actually pen to paper and think through and actually have to write your thoughts out and then send them. There was a time there that you had chance to think about it. Maybe half of the letters didn't get sent because after that person wrote them down, they're like, you know what, this is stupid, and threw it away, right? So I think the problem with what we have now is that, you know, instant gratification with very little understanding of who's on the other end of that comment. And so that's where I feel like the internet has created this vitriol for comments and things like that. But I'm like Patrick. I spent a lot of time reading through comments of our videos to improve our podcast and improve what we're providing as an entertainment, right? Our opinions are entertainment and informative for other people. And I spent a lot of time trying to think about how to improve it.
One, it's popular to hate on Destiny. There's no doubt about that. And in some respect, some of that is fair. But to the other end, too, it's not necessarily fair to hate on the individuals who have opinions about the game. Like, if I hated on Pope just because, you know, Pope liked Sony, you know, just because you like Sony, I hate you. That's, like, not necessary. It's not needed. And it's not good criticism.
I've actually been getting that a lot because I've been wearing the beanie that I got from PlayStation Experience a lot.
Yeah, you deserve
because
that,
because it's been getting kind of, for me, it's been getting a little cold, so I'm wearing the beanie because it's cold.
Were you wearing it on Xbox when you were playing as an Xbox character?
I didn't get it then. No.
Oh. Well, see, that would have been the ultimate troll.
You don't even play on Xbox, do you, Pat?
No, I don't. I've been meaning to because I've been trying to get, like, trials up and not necessarily, like, carry trials over there. I've just been wanting to do, like, a trials run over on Xbox this year just to try to get it done.
I will say, dude, as an Xbox fanboy, it is the better system, hands down.
Yeah. So here's what I want to know. Last time, or a while back when you were on the podcast, we discussed, like, matchmaking on the different systems.
Yeah.
We noted that Xbox had a much slower time on matchmaking. Like, it took a lot longer and is much quicker on PlayStation. Has that experience changed in, like, the past, say, 2 weeks or so?
Nah, I mean, you can, I mean, Tefty, I think you can speak to this to some extent too, but from my time playing, and to be real honest, I haven't been playing that much recently, but since Taken King has come out, you can look at sales, at least physical copy sales, and it'll tell you that, you know, there's a 2 million player difference, give or take, in vanilla sales, and there's a 1 million player difference in physical sales for Taken King. So with that difference, at least, you know, from the launch days, you're going to see that, you know, there's give or take, there's only X amount of people playing, and there's more people playing on the PlayStation because it's marketed more towards PlayStation mm-hmm. users than it is Xbox mm-hmm. users.
PlayStation's also selling better as a
yeah.
console.
It is.
So the install base.
The reason I was at
for trials though, for trials for me, I have experienced no difference.
Okay.
In matchmaking for trials.
For trials, I haven't experienced any difference, but like, what about just matchmaking and like for normal PvP?
I haven't played normal PvP on Xbox. Okay.
I haven't noticed it. You know, like again, I don't play on the other side, so I can't tell you if there's a difference in speed. But looking at numbers.
That's just something that I'd be interested in hearing from like the community is what are the times, because right now maybe the player base has just dropped off a lot. We really don't know exactly what they did or if they did anything, but what is currently happening is that, at least on PlayStation side, matchmaking for like 6v6 activities, whether you're joining in as a full six-man team or solo, it takes a long time. There is a lot more lag in the Crucible because it seems like it's basing the matches more on skill rather than on connection. Like if I join in a solo 6v6 lobby, I'm half the enemy team is like red bar, yellow bar. And same thing actually in trials. We've had this past week on Frontier, I had a lot of matches where normally in trials, it's green bars all the way. And if you see a red bar, there's probably something shady going on, at least for me. This past like 2 weeks in trials, we've had some very bad connections on the enemy team. Very, very bad.
I concur with that, Patrick. I had the same thing happen this weekend in trials where normally if I see a red bar, I'm like, oh crap, is this guy lag switching? But the match just went on. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. And I saw it probably 3 or 4 times during the weekend, getting worried, and then it wasn't a lag switcher, it was just a bad connection.
Yeah, also, I think there's something that needs to be clarified, that like just because you see a red bar doesn't automatically mean that we should assume lag switching.
No.
Lag switching is very different. Mm-hmm. Lag switching, usually you'll see somebody running into a wall, but they go and get a revive. Like that's like a lag switch right there.
But you'd get concerned when you started... In year one, I would get concerned when I started seeing red bars because they weren't that common.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're often accompanied by a lag switcher. Like, you'd then see the activity during pivotal times of the match. All of a sudden, you couldn't kill this guy, and he's running around getting revives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the two coincided. But now it seems more separated to me. Now I'll just see more red bars without the lag switcher there. You know, it's like, but that red bar still, in my head, you know, triggers that response. Oh, shit, is this guy a lag switcher?
You got... PTSD lag switch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so basically, like, what's been going on is, at least what we've been able to tell, is that the matchmaking is through either them changing something or just everyone's doing Sparrow Racingly, like everyone, causing like the overall population and the other playlists to drop so significantly that it's having to pick people that's around your skill level and then pull them from, like, Japan when you're in America.
Hasn't the lag complaint, though, been recent as of the last update? Because that's what I've noticed.
Yes.
I've noticed a lot of people complaining about lag.
Yes. That's the part that coincides with it. Because it feels like it's not taking connection speed into account when going for skill as well. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean,
it's frustrating.
I think you're on the right track. It could be lack of player base. Although I don't necessarily think that's the case, because, you know, regardless of, I mean, they haven't released any numbers of Taken King specifically, but, Eric Hirschberg did say something on the lines that on PlayStation, Taken King was the most downloaded day one, digital expansion ever. And they had the highest concurrence players of all time.
Since then, though, we've gotten Black Ops 3,
a hell of a lot of games
have come out. Like, you know, a ton of multiplayer specifically.
It's true.
But Halo 5.
Yeah. I wish, this kind of goes back to what we always talk about, but I wish they would release active player base so that you can see how many people are in the community. They would never do that because I think to a certain extent it would harm their reputation more than it would help them, but it would give you a better idea and potentially why you're seeing lag.
It would probably harm a hell of a lot more, because one of the interesting things on like Steam on the PC a feature where it tracks concurrent player usage of any particular game. Mm-hmm. So you're like, hey, this game looks really interesting. I wonder how the player base is. Oh, there's only like 300 concurrent players. Nope, not interested.
Right.
So like it can hurt a game as well.
Well, this
is interesting right here. I logged on to Bungie's Halo Reach mm-hmm. last night just because I wanted to check it out real quick. And there was 1,000 people in the regular Team Slayer playlist. I think it was like 12,000 online total. Mm-hmm. Like, they've always released numbers on that stuff. Like that was the last year that they released numbers.
Yeah. Halo used to always do that. Huh. It used to always tell you, I think they introduced it in like either H2 or H3, but it introduced like how many people are in the playlist actively searching. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
So last night on that game, there was 1,000 people in that playlist.
Interesting.
That's actually pretty good because
that's very good.
If you have 12,000 concurrent, you know, Battlefield 4, which is like a 2-year-old title, sits at something like 10,000 plus, mm-hmm. give or take. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's actually fallen below Star Wars.
Yeah. Battlefield 4 has more concurrent people than like Battlefield Hardline.
Yeah, that was true since day one.
That was sad. That was really sad.
Hardline. I mean, let's be honest.
Cops and robbers, man. You don't want to do cops and robbers? Oh, it's...
Visceral, the studio that built into Hardline, has gotten a lot of flack recently on some of the EA in general has gotten a lot of flack on you know, Battlefield as the series and like how they plan on moving it forward. And a lot of that's evident with DICE's shift away from it for Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you just kind of look at the industry a little bit and it'll tell you. I think that... Yeah, to a certain extent, showing the player base would worry some people. Maybe it wouldn't. Maybe the player base is actually good, and it's like, you know, 30, 40,000 people are playing concurrently. That's great. It's not like the number I think they want to tout all the time, which is like, you know, we have 9 million unique characters or something like that.
Yeah, I was trying to get super good advice footage on stream, and normally it would take me like 4 or 5 games. This one, it took me over 4 hours to get PvP footage for it because the first hour and a half to 2 hours was spent trying to find the playlist that would, one, give me quick matchmaking times. So I tried Mayhem Rumble, but then the game mode itself, it took too long to queue into, and then it took, it wasn't possible to like get heavy ammo enough consistently. I tried moving into the classic playlist, which just didn't happen. I sat in it for 10 minutes, didn't load. It never went above like 4 players in the thing. Ended up having to go do Rift, and it was like Rift and then Skirmish, because Skirmish was the daily for the day, and then Rift was one of the more popular modes, I think, at the time.
So I think the interesting thing, at least from what I've seen looking at it, is that Call of Duty is a PlayStation title now. It's not an Xbox title anymore. And so that's, I think, really interesting because Destiny is technically, in my mind, it is a PlayStation title, heavily marketed towards PlayStation more so. It's kind of like COD is both, obviously, but it's marketed heavily towards PlayStation. I think that you're going to see maybe some conflict there from Activision's end.
And Destiny released in a really bad Call of Duty year. Yeah. You know, it's like a lot of rabid Call of Duty fans just were not happy that year.
Right.
So, you know, I think that it did get a lot of Call of Duty people playing Destiny PvP, and those people now have a really good Call of Duty game to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, Activision
is concerned
about how they drop their DLC drops now, because you have 4 drops coming with Call of Duty, and I would be really surprised if they aligned those with Destiny.
I think after the release of the major game, you know, you can let those two communities kind of take care of themselves. You know, I don't think there's a lot of crossover between the people who buy DLC on Black Ops 3 and the people that buy DLC on Destiny, unless they're playing both games. You know, like, if you really love one or the other, you're going to buy DLC for that. But if you're kind of half in, half out, you're probably going to just buy one.
Yeah, but everybody who bought the Taken King already has a DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and
that's
like,
true. You don't have to buy anything. Well, theoretically, you don't have to buy anything for Destiny until Destiny 2 comes out.
Well,
Activision's thinking about their microtransaction business now. So they got the black market for Call of Duty, and then they got these DLC drops that are happening. I'm pretty sure they don't want to stomp on the possibility of Destiny's DLC microtransactions.
No, they actively look at it. Like, this is what EA does. I mean, EA will sit there and be like, okay, Star Wars Battlefront's coming out with something. We're not going to conflict with that. on like say the Battlefield side or the upcoming Mirror's Edge Catalyst. They do a very concerted effort to make sure that their global agenda is aligned in a way that they don't see that overlap or confliction. And they do look at it in terms of there are individuals that will play all titles, or their publisher loyalty goes to, you know, Activision or EA or something like that, where mm-hmm. they'll be like, I like this EA title, I may like this one. And I like this shooter, I'm probably going to like this shooter. So they look at it in terms of genre and you know, the overall loyalty. I think it's going to be very interesting to see, not necessarily this year's content, because we all know that it's free content, it'll be great, whatever. I'm very curious to see what Destiny 2 is going to do in terms of how it gives out content to the user, and is it going to conflict?
Yeah.
So.
You guys want to talk about the Trials
yes,
map?
Yes, week? I really...
Yeah. I thought it was damn interesting.
Yeah.
It was Frontier this week. It's known for the big bridge in the middle, and then some wide open areas on the sides, and then the back and the front, or the two spawn areas, are pretty kind of close quarters,
if you ever
like warehouse type things.
TF2, it's basically two fort.
So I jumped into this map, and I'm like, oh, I can't believe it's this map. Most of the time I played this, it's been 6v6, and it's just been a bunch of camping snipers making life miserable for everybody, and that's what I assumed Trials was going to be like, too. You know, like campers just waiting back in their spawn, you know, and then coming out with supers when it's time to take the control point. It actually ended up being a pretty fun Trials map, though. I really enjoyed myself on this map.
I didn't.
You didn't. Why really? Not? I would have thought with the
movement
with the snipers.
Movement around the map itself was not interesting at all. It was one of the
why
most
not?
Boring
why
maps.
Why do you say that?
Around.
Yeah, why not?
So attacking someone on this map, like,
mm-hmm.
it basically the map kind of devolved around it into moving in straight lines for the most part across the map. To get to somewhere quicker, you can find where someone is based on either, you know, throwing a grenade or seeing where they are on the radar. But there wasn't really any interesting map movements to have to make if you're trying to retreat or flank or anything like that. Whereas on, say, Drifter, a lot of people really hated that map. I thought that map had really interesting movement opportunities for flanking, attacking, due to just how the map was made. This one, it just didn't seem to work out that way for me. I also, this is a complete 1%er tryhard problem, but like if you're in like a Last Guardian Standing type moment, moving around the map to possibly gain an advantage on the enemy team is extraordinarily difficult on this one, because it's so easy to lock down such large portions of the map with a sniper cover.
Mm-hmm.
Say they died on the right side of the map, and you were kind of covering middle or left side, getting to them is essentially a death sentence, and moving around the enemy team is even more difficult because it's so easy to position yourself on this map due to how quickly you can move across it. That was my main thing about this map. I liked my initial experience into it. I thought it was interesting, but once I ended up like kind of playing with True Vanguard some, so not my normal team, some of the larger flaws of the map started to kind of poke their heads out to me. But that's just my opinion. That's just my opinion. I didn't like it for those reasons. It's completely fine.
So I like that you were penalized for dying out in the mm-hmm. open. You know, like if your team started rushing and a couple of you got picked off, then yeah, that last guy is going to have a hard time getting revives because, you know, you died out in the open. It's your mistake. You died out in, you know,
I think,
rushed out through the open.
I think like that is completely valid on almost any other map. That particular statement is completely valid on any other map. No, because on this one, you eventually have to move out into the open. There are no sneaky movement lines that you can really take on this map.
Well, I liked how, okay, so you could stay underneath. Right? Is there like you could stay in the water basically mm-hmm. and just kind of run through there? It'd take you a little bit longer if you tried to jump across and basically stay high. You're much more susceptible to getting sniped. So if both teams came out of their spawn and one team just stopped and like looked across and they saw you coming, you were easy to snipe if you were trying to jump across, get through there quick. So like teams that were shotgun heavy, you know, that's what you could expect, is they would be trying to come at you as fast as possible. A lot of times that two teams would come to the edges of their spawn, both with sniper rifles, and you get kind of this initial snipe battle,
which is what I was fearful of on this map.
And then, like, one team would back off, or one team would just dip below into, like, the river area, like the underbridge section. And basically, when you were under there, you weren't very vulnerable to sniping. It was very hard for a sniper to get a line on you without him going, like, way up high on a wall or on a box or something. And then he was really vulnerable. So I liked that. I liked how the movement, you had to stay low unless you were playing it real risky. But then you were also... You could go back into your spawn, or you could push an enemy into their spawn and then use, you know, close range weapons. There was one card where we finished our card, but we still had to do the bounties, you know, like the 10 game bounty. So we decided to just go sidearms only. And that was super fun because we just had to keep it at these like close range battles with the sidearms. That was super fun. And as long as we kind of push them into battles, either in those lowlands, in that river stuff, or in their spawn, we would do fine. But if we tried to, you know, outsnipe them with a sidearm, obviously we weren't going to do so well. I like the map. I thought it was fun.
Yeah. Not to make this just a two-sided conversation here, but my what you said right there, it pretty much the only side route that you could take from to keep yourself from getting sniped was to go under. For the most part, that was the most successful route that you could take, and that just doesn't seem like a very interesting option when there's only one real route that you can take on a map to ensure a close range play style.
Now, I disagree with you that there was there was one route. As a matter of fact, I felt with one of my favorite classes to run. Well, actually, I didn't have a favorite class for this map, although I did feel my Hunter and Titan were the most successful simply because of their movement modes.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But I felt like agility and route selection was really important. My team tended to, we could, depending on the team we were playing against, we could choose to be aggressive and rush or maneuver to a different area and position ourselves to in an advantageous position over where the flag spawns and make them come to us. So for me, I felt that actually there was a lot of ways that I could trick and get around people using cover and using the map. So I don't know. I personally really enjoyed it. I think it was scout rifle heavy, scout snipe rifle heavy, but I did know some friends of mine that are mainly shotgun players that were able to be very, very effective. So
I like the fact that you were penalized if you broke off from your team and got sniped out in the middle. Like, I think that's a good trade-off. It's like you went for a flank and now you're penalized for that. And there actually was a few more routes that you could take successfully if you wanted to try to not get sniped. You just had to be a little more cognizant of the other sniper lines from the team side. I do know that opposite flag side, that route was the worst.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very difficult route.
The
to
open
go
one with the beach you, on the with
yeah,
the very open
exactly.
beach.
Exactly.
That was
yeah. Not beach side. Beach side was the worst. Like you could easily get sniped out there or snipe people that wanted to approach over there unless you were there immediately. Like if you spawn and went in with or if you were using Mighty Multi Tool, which a lot of people were, you could get there really fast. But then you had to get the snipes off really fast. Otherwise, you were going to be a sitting duck and then die out there. But the route by the control point that would spawn
was a great
like snipe battle over there. And then some people would try to rush with shotties. There is one major problem with that map though, and that is the head glitching. There is
agreed
some absolutely stupid head glitching spots that are available.
I like how
on that
there
map
was a,
for
there are, there's a new
for the spawn side
one.
That's on the it's on the spawn side where it's all open in that garage area.
Not the not the enclosed train station, but the one
exactly
that's way more.
Yeah,
open.
The open one. There is several head glitching spots in there that Bungie needs to absolutely patch because it is so stupid.
We encountered that a few times. True Vanguard and I, like we didn't encounter it when like Watts, Ian, and I. But at the end of the weekend, once the word got out on the street that there was a spot that you
stupid.
So basically on that side, you can actually go into the basically go into the ceiling and have complete
view,
view of the entire map or at least the entire left side for the most part.
There was also a head glitch spot off to the beach side. Mm-hmm. By the special room.
Yep. That's right.
Outside.
Yep.
And yeah, you could snipe people right in the face, mm-hmm. and they would not take any damage. Mm-hmm. I was just like, that is so stupid.
It's
so that like that was a big problem.
On
that.
Top of the bridge for 5 seconds.
I love that.
I loved that
added a dynamic to it. I mean, you just
it was high risk.
Yeah. I mean, I would get a heavy, a boost up on top, run across, and if I didn't, you know, I had to commit, like, cause you can't stand up there and head glitch it and shoot down, right? You had to.
You had 5 seconds.
Yeah. You had to jump up there, run across and jump off, you know? And
yeah, you had to do your thing real quick.
So, I mean, you were, there's high, like Tefty said, high risk, high reward. And I like that it gave you an opportunity to, you know, kind of be creative with your lines. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a fun map. I liked it a lot more than Drifter. Drifter just kind of pissed me off because it was so, like, if you played against a good team, you might as well just switch to your shotguns on that one that were shade stepping. But this map, I felt like you could use a lot of different weapons, be successful with it, and it didn't, like, as long as you were aware of what type of snipes could happen to you, then you could prevail without being a sniper. But
it took me a little while to learn the sniper routes because I don't like that map. I don't play it a lot because mm-hmm. in 6v6, I feel like it's just snipers on the edges of the map shooting in.
Yeah.
So I tend to not like it. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn it for Trials of Osiris. But once I did, once you know those sniper routes and those lanes, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I dug it.
What were the rewards this week? I can't remember.
It was the glove? Chest, was it?
The chest?
Yeah, I think it was.
And
I think
the doctrine?
Yeah.
The doctrine of passing.
Yeah, the doctrine of passing. Yeah.
My baby. Mm.
Bay.
I didn't see a single counterbalance one drop, which was really disappointing.
No, I didn't either. Yeah.
So
I've had a lot drop at this point for me.
So those people that have been asking me on Twitter, it's just counterbalance, brace frame, and persistence is in my opinion the best role on it. And I started seeing more people using it in PvP, and it's frustrating to get killed by it because I just feel like I shouldn't have said anything to anybody. And then maybe it no, it's, the word's
it's
out.
So good.
It's so good, and it's a lot of fun. And there's actually a couple others. I don't know if you guys wanted to like talk about the Arms Day drops, but there is the Arminius D
mm-hmm.
auto rifle. Yeah.
It's very similar.
It's very similar. And there's two drops on it that are they're not as good as the Doctrine of Passing, but they're pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, that thing dropped with like massively stable rolls and it made it a laser beam. You actually, I shoot it like a laser beam. I just keep it at somebody's head and there's no recoil to it at all.
Right. Well, they have one that has rangefinder and crowd control.
One's the one I would go for.
Right. It's small bore. Good. And the thermals.
You need stability on that, though. It's just that gun needs stability. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come with the base stability that it really needs.
Right, and so that's what I felt as well. There's another one that came out that I'm bringing it up right now.
The Herja came with a rangefinder.
The Herja D pulse rifle came. The one I ended up recommending people get was a Head Seeker Feeding Frenzy with hand laid stock.
Yes,
so
that's a good
completely
one.
Max stability. The problem is the
range was terrible.
The range is actually really good on the Hake pulse rifles. And you can take a range hit too, because at the ranges where like the damage fall off really starts to happen, you're not going to be able to hit all your shots anyway. So you're using it past its effective range there. It just sucks that the Hake pulse rifles feel like they got hit a little bit harder with that pulse rifle nerf than
any of the
other
ones. On paper it felt like it should have been a god roll, and I ranked it up immediately, took it into PvP and played a few hours with it last night, and I felt like it wasn't holding its own. It's
simply not.
Ufern was another
one. Oh, the HC4 hand cannon.
There were three solid rolls this week on that hand cannon.
I picked the one with Firefly. Okay. Rifle barrel and luck in the chamber. I felt like
it's a good
PvE. What I really wanted was a PvE pistol. Mm-hmm. I don't really feel like PvP is a place for pistols right now, other than, you know, Last Word or Thorn. So I I got it as a PvE pistol, and it's actually really a lot of fun to use in PvE.
Yeah. That's going to serve you well in PvE. I mean, as far as well as any legendary is going to do, it's going to be fine because that rifle barrel is going to help you out with range. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm using it.
It's a nice hand.
Yeah, I've used it. I used it in the raid. I ranked it up, and it's great for ads. You know, just one headshot of a lower trash mob, and it blows up and takes care of, like, you know,
pretty much.
It feels
everything.
A lot. It feels like a fate bringer. If you put a piece of gear that reloads hand cannons quicker, it feels.
Speaking of fate bringer, this is the Undying Mind Strike this week.
Mm-hmm.
As the nightfall, so that is a very easy time to go farm the Imago loot because.
Yep, I've got.
Correct
two
me
of
if
them.
I'm wrong, but legendaries have an increased chance of dropping in their strike specific playlist when it's the nightfall.
Oh really?
I didn't know that.
Well,
I've done it a bunch of times and haven't gotten it. And I did the nightfall twice and it got it dropped twice, both times.
Oh wow!
So I'm not sure if that's.
But you do have
your RNG is usually so bad too. It's surprising.
Yeah. You have Pope RNG. Good luck. So.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, they were both trash rolls. So
I got one that was half. It was half. It had like better radar. And then the range increase, just like the vanilla range increase in Firefly on it. It's like it needed that Outlaw. It was so close.
Yep. Outlaw, yeah. Firefly.
Outlaw, Firefly.
Buddy of mine picked up Outlaw, range, and then I think Firefly.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
But
yeah,
I think the
other two roles on that Oofarin were like third eye life support, which is fantastic for PvP. So you can, you know, you have third eye active, and then usually you're going to end a fight when using a hand cannon, like in the red health. So then, boop, kill someone. It should hopefully proc get you up.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I've seen a lot of complaints recently on Twitter about the Thorn and a couple guns.
What the
coming
hell,
back to
Wally?
Piss people
is it?
Off.
I haven't
one
seen
again?
It.
Jesus,
that's
I have not seen it.
I'm just saying.
Oh my god,
it's all over.
It is
over sweaty.
Really.
Yeah, 3v3
playlist. Not even sweaty play. Not even sweaty play. Like, every single playlist I have gone into, I have seen Thorn. Not just a single player, multiple people using Thorn on my team,
like team
and the enemy team. It's almost every single game I go into, I see it.
Yeah, dude, it's just, that sucks, man. Because I think, to some respect, when TTK came out, when TTK came out, the hand cannons were pretty much done. You know, last word,
they were pretty much done. Dead.
Yeah.
The only one you could
and now
use
it's
was
like,
Hawkmoon.
And now they're like, I don't think they're purposely bringing it back, but I do think that there is this mentality, and, you know, I'm probably going to get some hate for this one, but I don't think last word or Thorn take any skill to use. I've always been in that camp that if you want to sit there and tote how good you are in PvP, and you run like last word Thorn, and then it was like, you know, coupled with like Blade Dancer shotgun. You saw the top tier quote unquote PvP players using it. I was like, I don't think so, man. That just doesn't take too much skill, in my opinion. Now I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that will say it does, and I'm cool with that. But I don't like the fact that it's coming
rip,
back.
Rip Wally in the comments.
Yeah.
I mean, people get
well,
hate on
hold
it.
Hold on, let's talk about this real quick.
Weapons
first off, you do have to understand the mechanics of the game. So there is some skill involved with understanding how those are going to stack up and put you into an advantageous situation in PvP. Is it easier to spam the trigger at the proper distance with last word and get a kill? Yes, of course. But part of that skill comes in knowing how and when to get into those situations. So I see what you're saying, Wally, but at the same time, like, you can't just write it off and be like, it's a blanket statement. All people who use those weapons are using no skill when they use them.
You know? I fall in line with you a little bit more there, Tefty, on that, because I use both those guns a lot. But there's also another piece of that it does offer more opportunities for that gun to be used. It's more of a universal tool because it's so forgiving. I mean, the last word. I didn't like it going away because shotguns were so powerful, and it was the only really anti-shotgun thing. So then they took away, you know, the last word, right, as a viable gun, and then left shotguns to reign supreme until they nerfed the crap out of shotguns, It's back and forth. It's like the balancing of these two types of guns. Right. They haven't found a happy place for them to be yet, because you're back to seeing Last Word just everywhere and Thorn, and I don't know.
Last Word, in all fairness though, is not as bad as it was in year one. I mean, it's everywhere.
I'll agree with
people
that.
Are using
yeah,
it,
I mean,
yeah.
But it's not nearly.
It's not as crutchy. As it was. I think, all right, I'm gonna revise my statement here.
Oh, okay. Just look at Wally.
I'm not going back. I want to be very clear. I'm not going back on my opinion.
I
fundamentally think that vanilla hand cannons, Last Word and Thorn, didn't take as much skill as using scouts and pulses back in vanilla. Obviously, that's changed now. Now the popular thing to hate on is using a pulse rifle and a sniper rifle.
Now the popular thing to hate on is Last Word and a sniper rifle when the mix made a change.
Right, but the big issue with those hand cannons, especially the Thorn, was the fact that the Thorn was like basically two shot. You know what I mean?
Well, now it's three body. It's three body. It's guaranteed three body.
And that's an issue.
It is
in my
issue.
Personal opinion.
And it slows
that's
the game
issue.
Down a lot. It just does.
And then Last Word is, you know, a fully automatic hand cannon, man. Like, it's one of those things that, do I think necessarily that everyone uses them or are no skilled players? No, that's not true, because some of the best players in the game that I've seen can go from any weapon and use them fine. I think there's a fundamental problem where players in the community will talk about how experienced they are in PvP. And when you look at the weapons that they use, they were like vanilla Suros users when it was blatantly overpowered. Vex Mythoclass users in vanilla when it was broken.
Oh man, you're talking to all my favorites.
Word,
it's like going
Thorn.
To Baskin Robbins, picking all my favorite flavors of ice cream.
They may be your favorites, right? And I'm sure there are a lot of people's favorites, and that's like a defense I've seen. Like, I like using those guns because I like them. That's fine. That's completely cool. But the big difference is, like, if you're good with a gun, you don't necessarily need to like wave your dick in someone's face and be like, I'm really good with my Thorn vanilla. Like, I'm really good at PvP with it. Like, are you really good at PvP though with that weapon? Like, or are you just good because that weapon is a semi crutch?
Basically, before hand cannons were nerfed, I think Last Word was in its overall perfect place. It was designed to be a close range hand cannon where, you know, you're going to use it in a 1v1 engagement in a much closer range than normal. Because it had such high, you know, burst damage potential. Now, right. Since the aim down sight accuracy got buffed across all hand cannons, it's you can use it in a range that is well far out from that close range, well into the far ends of medium range with the exact same accuracy for the most part. So, you have this massive range that it's covering, and then you can just run a sniper rifle to cover the ends that
cover the rest of it. I think there's another issue there too. It's not necessarily the weapons are to some respect a bit of a problem, but I think the maps.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
sort of
oh,
exemplify
yeah.
that.
It's map design for sure.
No, it's more than one particular thing, but yeah, maps are also playing a huge part of it when there are these things called long range engagements. There's not a hell of a lot of places on maps that happens.
Well, we
truthfully.
Used to have big maps, and the community bitched about it. We used to have vehicles on maps, remember? And the community hated it, so they stopped making them.
No, I loved
yeah,
it.
But, yeah, but those
I
were
loved
huge,
it.
Though.
To be fair, though, all of those maps were long-range engagements for the most part. And once you got into unless it was an objective-based game mode where you had to go in, capture a point, then it was beneficial to have a different type of weapon loadout. But for the most part, you know, you stuck to, like, scouts and snipers. On those,
you can still play those maps though.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to go to the class.
They just don't come up in playlists.
They just don't come up playlists. Yeah, but then like I had the only problem I have with those big maps was the Clash variant where people just stayed like 60 miles away, Mark Wahlbering snipering.
I loved Bastion for that reason because you would like say you spawned on the higher end spawn of the map. You'd go to the right, go through that big, you know, archway, look to the left, and you'd see like four or five people just hard scoping either to the left or maybe one or two looking at you, and it just turned into a shooting gallery, just looking down there, killing and yeah. But of those larger maps, I think Bastion was the Mars one was definitely the best because it had
just, that was a fun map.
It had way more movement opportunities on it than the other ones.
First Light was bomb though.
First Light was our first love.
First Light a lot. I like playing control.
I love First Light.
First Light. I like to, you know, getting your Sparrow out. I like doing the vehicles.
The first beginning rush of that game was like Sparrow to Sparrow, yeah. Basically meeting like on that middle right part of the map, left part of the map. Being
where you I liked how
that's where all the engagements.
I liked how B on that map was super perilous. I liked how A and C connected like through a building, so you didn't really have to worry about snipers if you ran through there. I thought that was a good map, and you know, it just got abandoned.
Yeah. Then we had Sky Shock, which is for all intents and purposes god awful.
I'll be fair. I think that like one side of that map is good, but then there's like the beach side that makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's awful.
That is a big flat map that just promotes you not moving. If there's ever a map that's like that's a camping map, that's the one.
That is a camping map.
I do that all the time. Whenever I play, and I used to do this on stream, but I would like take viewers and we'd go play the classic list. Or combined arms and up, and I would just go sit on B, that middle B bridge, and I wouldn't move for the rest of the game.
Yeah, yep. Sounds about right.
So,
I got a question for you guys related to the weapons topic.
Okay,
and the thorn problem issue. Do you think that year one weapons should have the same power rating as year two in these regular playlists? Like, obviously, Iron Banner does what it does. And Trials does what it does. But do you think moving on, like in year three, they should make it where our year two weapons get nerfed as well? Or like get like a significant power reduction because it's year two instead of year three? And
what
at least
and what about, then that would fix a lot of that issue of like, oh, well, you're playing the year one meta, dude. Like, come on.
Yeah.
What about, I think we talked about this a long time ago on a podcast. I think like Fizzer was on it. What about just introducing a non-exotic playlist? Why not just do that?
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes you want to use something. Like, I want to use my multi-tool.
Then go use it. You know what I mean? Then, like, use it in the exotic playlist. Like, I think that, to some respect, the exotics, and I've always kind of stood by this position, the exotics take the best things out of those particular classes and make them way too viable to use. Like, the Mita is great, but the big problem with scouts is mobility. You know, scouts don't necessarily have mobility. Mita provides that mobility. You know, like hand cannons are great.
I don't know. I think that's more of like a sweaty playlist, in my opinion.
I think it really needs like a
sweaty specific playlist. I think they need custom games so they can create their own sweaty playlists and have options like that. But as an overall, I think like if you want to play year one, you should go to classic.
I get where you're going. So like there should be yearly playlists for content, right? So like in year two, you couldn't necessarily, or like if you came in with a year two weapon, it would predominantly do better than, say, your year one weapon, right?
Yeah, so, like, people complaining about Thorn, it's like, if you want to use a Thorn, go into year one classic. Have at it.
I know. I think, I remember Deej was talking about that particular issue when Taken King was coming out, and he basically said that, like, you know, the big problem we have is, like, well, your weapons aren't useless. You can go back and play normal PvP with those weapons, and they're still fine. Mm-hmm. I think there's a conflict between those two. I think that the exotics are potentially a piece of the problem.
Would we be having this conversation right now if Thorn didn't exist?
No. Maybe the damage over time only procs on a headshot. You know, at least give it some skill-based component. But, you know, I have a big problem with having a 3v3 where one bullet randomly placed on your toe can take you out of a fight for 15 seconds before your health starts to regenerate. It's just the dumbest thing that could ever be placed short of blink in a game. I mean,
I'm telling you, man, it's the exotics in general are really the issue, because there, I don't think there's a dividing line between this exotic is retarded, but this one isn't. I think the second you go into looking at, people complained about the Red Death and the Bad Juju to a certain extent because those weapons were quote unquote crutch worthy. But I remember a time when those weapons took skill to use because it wasn't a guaranteed kill. And, you know, if you went up against a Thorn or a Last Word, you were not guaranteed a kill against those individuals. It was tough to win those gunfights if you could at all.
I think that it's a little bit more fundamental than that, that they keep. And I was listening to Sage Merrill on the Crucible Radio podcast.
Not to derail you, but if you guys haven't listened to that and you're listening to this podcast right now, you could probably pause this one and go listen to the Crucial Radio podcast that they just did, because
it's really
interesting.
Good.
It's interesting. I'll say it's interesting.
Well, so here's part of my problem, and I understand it now more than ever. I absolutely categorically disagree with Sage's view on guns in the game. They should not be the same between PvE and PvP. You can make a gun different in PvP. It just should not be the same. You should have a powerful, badass Borderlands experience in PvE where you're shooting minions of the darkness and shit's blowing up. Great. I want to feel like a badass space ranger in PvE. But if you're going to make a balanced PvP, that shit can't exist. It just can't, because you can't make badassness balanced. You just, how do you badass, how do you balance badassness?
I'm so hard to balance.
Well, no, but like,
it's also because we're trying to make it competitive. Bungie doesn't say it's competitive. Not yet, at least, you know? So once, if they start moving towards that direction, then Bungie has to face that fact and that question. But it's really the community that says, hey, we take this competitively, but maybe Bungie's like, yeah, but look at all these inconsistencies. You know,
I don't think Destiny's competitive. I think Destiny has too many inconsistencities.
Yeah, under its current state, it's not competitive. Look what
it could be in the future, definitely. But there's things fundamentally wrong with like the game engine itself that hampers it from being competitive. Not
you talking about those sweet peer to peer connections?
I'm talking about the peer to peer connections, 30 FPS character movement,
head glitching.
Yeah, like, but I think it was Pat. Someone said it on one of the podcasts I was on that there shouldn't be a difference between PvE and PvP, because when you go to the difference, you're like, say you're in PvP, weapon sucks balls, right? But then you go back to say PvE and the weapon's awesome, and then you go back to PvP and you're not consistent. There's no consistency. And I think there's a good argument there, or a good conversation that can be had in terms of like, well, should the weapons be consistent across the board?
Well,
or should there be a difference?
They've already started to realize that that's a problem, and they've started to backpedal on it. All of a sudden, you can proc final round on a headshot for minions of the darkness, essentially, because a one shot kill is against the Guardian all the time is a headshot. You can't put just the tip in. You got to just do it. You can just say
Destiny podcast, folks.
My point is that you can call it whatever you want. But they're just not balanced. It procs only on headshots. No shit, huh? It procs against minions of the darkness. That's what it does. So why don't you just call it what it is and change the weapons so that they operate differently in PvE versus PvP? You can be creative in that. And then
go ahead. Can I be real on this one? I think fundamentally here's the real issue. I think they just don't. Not necessarily care enough, but they don't see enough of it yet to be like, we need to fundamentally change this immediately. Their PvP changes take forever. They take forever to make changes on PvP. And I think that's the biggest problem, is they don't track it as actively, when PvP, to some respects, is the end game. Like, if Oryx was broken, for example, like if it was like Crota broken, right? When it first launched, people would be not playing it, be throwing a fit, whatever. They'd fix it very quickly because it's an end game. They don't treat, in my mind, PvP the same way.
The reason why we have these conversations also is because it came from Bungie. And Bungie's pedigree is a very, very competitive game, Halo. And if this was a brand new company that we just fell in love with, I don't know if we'd have the same type of arguments about the PvP side, because we'd be like, well, Bungie just, or whatever new company, just didn't really intend to make a competitive game, even though some people take it pretty competitively. And I think that's part of the issue at hand, is that we think Bungie should deliver a competitive experience, and Bungie has in no way said that they were going to deliver a competitive experience like that. They've never once said, hey, we're going to give you this extreme Halo-esque experience where everything acts the same and is going to matter, but yet you can still go into a player versus player environment. You can have this experience that's very competitive. Never said that. So maybe down the road they're planning on it, and that's why they take so much time to balance PvP, because in their minds they're like, well, guys, this isn't really the competitive experience that we would deliver. So why waste time on it? In other words.
Right. But they flirt with it though, with like Iron Banner and Trials. when they introduce competitive type game modes, that's like
it's still, yeah, but that's linked into the RPG progression.
Yeah, but it isn't at the same time because Trials is directly targeted at the player base that wants to actively play against other players in a competitive setting. I mean, Trials is even, you know, down to the fine tune mark where you're trying to play against players with better connection so that you can have a better competitive experience.
Shockingly, I absolutely agree with Wally on this. Mm-hmm. You need to make sure that if you're going to call, a pig, you know, they've got a really hard time committing to that PvP can be competitive. They just need to create the rule sets for competitive PvP and give me a playlist so I don't have to go into regular PvP and feel the stupidity of it. I mean, honestly, I just don't, you're on a 10 kill streak and somebody Nova bombs you. Okay, great. You know, that's fine. That's fine. Then that's Destiny PvP in a nutshell, right? It's not meant to be competitive.
Destiny PvP in a nutshell is somebody is red barring and is on the top of the kill board.
Absolutely.
Because
that's
godlike.
That's an even deeper problem to it. But when we're looking at competitive playlists where the player is balanced in their skill set, when it's skills against skill, there's some fundamental flaws, like the radars are too big, the supers happen too often. There's too much special,
too much
ammo.
Special ammo.
There's all these things that make the game very uncompetitive. Now, is it fun as hell in regular PvP if you're going in with a bunch of bros and you're just going to hang out and, you know, space magic, woo, you know, okay, great. Hey, I love space magic just like the next guy. But if you're going to give me a competitive game mode, call it, you know, Iron Banner, call it Trials of Osiris. Don't put lipstick on that pig and sell it to me as competitive, because it isn't.
Well, I think it isn't. I think Tefty hit the point being the pedigree of Bungie, and that's the issue where the Bungie we're talking about now isn't the Bungie that made Halo. The majority of 343 are the experienced guys that took the time to understand that, hey, you know, these are the fundamental problems with Halo. How do we make them better? And they went so far as to bring on professional Halo players, guys who've been around the series for a long time, that understand and say, look, these are the issues with your title. This is what we need to fix. And to that end, Halo 5 is a fantastic competitive shooter.
Mm-hmm.
It really is good. You know, it's just, and even in the casual, like Warzone side feels competitive, you know, and it feels good. So yeah. I think to offer more of a solution, I think that Deej has gone on to say that he disagrees with the competitive players or some of the competitive players that say that supers aren't balanced. He's like, I don't necessarily disagree or I don't necessarily agree. And that's like, okay, you're the community manager and I get that you have your own opinions on things, but you need to some respect to look at your professional players, the guys that do come from other titles and say, this is what works in a professional title. This is what doesn't work. And offer that game mode to individuals or just offer private servers.
Yeah.
Then you solve the problem. So just
give me
bring your netcode up to 2015. But here's the thing. I do think that they can keep the bullet experience, the actual gunplay dynamic, the fundamental core of the bullet dynamics. They can keep those the same. It's just, it's the actual damage values and fall off when it comes to PvP, like, or the range fall off and the damage values. Those need to get adjusted for PvP. And then Wally is absolutely right. If they're going to have an actual competitive playlist, they need to just get rid of exotics. They need to not be in there because those perks, they just should not be allowed in a competitive.
They're just not balanced.
Yeah, they're not balanced.
They're not meant to be balanced.
They're meant for PvE. They're meant for space magic. It just doesn't.
Get back to Tefty's original question that he asked is like, do you think we should like leave this stuff behind? I think, they have to. Year one stuff is constantly the problem. It's always the problem. The last word, Thorn, Suros,
right.
Red Death, Mida, these are all year one weapons. I think they learned a lot when they created the year two weapons because we're not talking about them in this conversation. So, yeah, I think, Tefty, that this conversation proves that, yes, they have to leave this stuff behind. Yeah,
you're right.
But how do you respond, and this is, I think, the same problem that came up, how do you respond to the people in the community that don't want to leave those weapons behind? The guys that will say, and to the extent I kind of agree, they put the time in, to get those weapons, they put X amount of time in to get the rapier.
It's, you know, it's time for something new.
I just think play them
in the year one playlist.
Yeah.
If you want an experience that lasts for 10 years, you need to take PvP as seriously as you take PvE. Yeah.
I think they need ranked and social playlists. Social, you can have your exotics. Ranked, there's no exotics in there.
Yeah, a ranked playlist would be good. I think that would do the community a lot of good, too.
Yep.
You guys want to do some Twitter questions?
Yes, please. Yep.
All right.
I've been silent for like the past 20 minutes, it seems.
At Call of Wally.
Nice.
Call of Wally.
Do you feel...
That's legit.
Do you feel SRL was worth the grind for loot, or was it underwhelming?
Two maps.
Full disclosure for me, I have not put in the grind.
Uh-huh.
Yep. I'm kind of waiting until the last minute to get all my stuff done.
I have no desire to. Okay, I can get a 320 helmet, 320 class time. That's cool.
I bought all the Sparrows.
The problem is I have to play Sparrow Racing League to do that, and I like Destiny because of first-person shooter. I don't care about racing.
Yeah.
If Sparrow Racing League had more maps and more mechanics to it, would you have a different opinion?
I would need to see the changes before I could answer that question.
Think Mario Kart.
Mario Kart, yeah. I'm with Tefty on this one. Mario Kart. There's power-ups on the map. There's the ability to take other racers out. And there's just more maps.
I would
Instead
play
of
it
two,
more.
There's
I
eight.
What I like about this game are the first-person shooter aspects. Racing's fine. But if you go look at my Steam folder, you look at every single game I've ever purchased. I think the only racing game I ever actually bought was like Need for Speed Underground and Cruisin' USA on the N64.
So, Cruisin' USA.
Classic.
So there's my pedigree for racing games. I'm just not interested in it. I don't care.
So I felt the same way you did when this was announced. But I jump in here every 3 days or so into the SRL. And I have a pretty decent time. I'll do anywhere from like 3 to 5 or 6 races in a session. The gear doesn't have any pull on me whatsoever. I don't care about the gear. Some of it looks kind of cool. Like it's cool to have a different helmet than you get from the raid or from other places. But for the most part, I don't care about the gear. I think it's just kind of a fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's a fun side thing.
I liked the what I liked about it the most has been the different sparrows. And so what I did is I went ahead and bought them all. And then
me too. I did the same thing.
I haven't played it since then. I like having the cool stuff.
Me too.
I can't stand sparrow. I suck at it. I jump in there every once in a while with my friends and like, you know, feign some interest when they want to play it. And then I'm like, yay, sparrow racing. Okay, you guys want a raid? And then that's it. So I guess I'm just not a huge fan of it. I do like the sparrows.
I got the pink one.
It's fun drunk, dude. You get drunk and you play and it becomes very enjoyable. I don't know what that says about the game mode itself. You know what I mean? But
that's my problem. I haven't been doing that. So okay.
Drunk SLR or SRL.
SRL.
I was called SLR.
Me too, yeah.
Single lens reflex.
Yep.
Nerds.
Nerds.
Nerds. All right. Rhett at Southpaw says, do you think Hawkmoon deserved to have its range cut so harshly? Short answer, yes.
Yes.
For balance reasons, yes. For personal reasons, not as harsh as it was. I
can you imagine if it didn't have that though right now?
I think it's nice not being just sniped across the map with the Hawkman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead, it's a Hawksaw. Right?
Yes.
Stephen Burns at Speedy Warrior says, how do you guys deal with rushers in trials?
If someone is rushing you, what you need to do is not be in an area where you cannot retreat or otherwise move away. So what people that rush you hate are large open spaces. So move into an area where you will be able to see this person rushing you. So you will have ample time to kill them before they can fully rush you.
Sometimes that means advancing into that space.
Yes.
I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make, is they think, I'll just keep backing up, but they back themselves into corners, basically, with doors near them. Which makes it easier on the rusher. I think if you go out into that middle area, that's where you're going to find success against rushers. That big open area, that's where you want to be against rushers.
Yeah, you always backpedal slower than you move forward. So you're already at the disadvantage if you're trying to backpedal on guys coming at you.
Mm-hmm. I think a big problem a lot of people do is that they end up turtling into their base because of the rushers. And that's like the worst thing you could do. Do not turtle into your base. You're likely going to get smoked out or naded out.
The person is
sniped out from different lines.
If the person is consistently rushing you, it's probably because they know they're good at it. And they really like it when you don't move.
Or, alternatively, they're just working on a bounty, a trials bounty.
God, they just want to get the shit over as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I try to deal with, or if I get like a really aggressive team, I find it's best to just do the rotation with them. Like if they're going to rush to our spawn, let's rush over to their spawn. And then they have to be like,
that's what I do.
They either have to keep on trying the rush or they get to calm down for a second, which usually throws off their game so that you can line up some snipes.
Yeah. Very seldomly will rushers all rush three together at the same time. They'll one will go left, one will go right, one will go to the center. And they're going to try to flank you. So as a team, you push to one side or the other and grab one of them out, and you team shoot them, right? You basically just gang up on one or two of them, three on one or three on two, and then take control of that orb. Don't move from that orb, and then make it your new point, rallying point, and then just team shoot anything that comes at you.
Mathematically, if you can always be in a 2v1 and you're on the 2 side, you are always going to win.
But
if you can consistently hit those numbers.
But if you're on the 1 side, it makes for sick montage footage.
It does. Montage. You can pull off those six no-scopes.
I actually, when we were doing True Vanguard and I were doing trials carries, I ended up, I didn't try to, but there were a lot of times where I was the last Guardian standing against like a full team of 3. And it feels so good to come out on top. And then it just feels bad to let your team down.
Pope and I, for the final game to go to the White House, had to come back from 4-0, right?
Yep, that was it.
4-0. And we won. We won five rounds in a row.
Wow, that was fucking good.
And it came down to some crazy stuff. Crazy supers. Yeah.
And the guy that ridiculous. We were helping, the viewer that we were helping, he turned out to be the same guy who made our you remember that photo of us? It was like a cartoon character, South Park looking.
Yep.
It ended up being that guy. He won the lottery or a raffle.
Yeah, won the raffle
to get in
Archon Myth, right?
Yeah, and then he gets in and we're like, hey, he's like, hey, I'm glad you liked that drawing I sent you. And I'm like, which one? And it turns out to be him, right? And so in the final match, in the final play, he rezzes, right? And this is crazy exchange. I wish I had recorded it actually, but it was super after super, just crazy exchange. You were using your Titan, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah, I did it. I Titan smashed a
Blade Dancer,
a Thunderstorm,
or a Thunderstorm.
No, it was a Thunder Warlock.
Yeah,
Stormcaller.
Stormcaller. There we go. That's how often I use them.
Thunderstorm.
And then I was like Thunder. Yeah, Thundercats. And then I turned around and like body shot the last guy and killed him and won the round.
Nice. Zero Talent at, I love this Twitter tag, at Couples Spa C. So there's a Couples Spa A and B too. Apparently.
Nice.
As things are now, do you feel Destiny has a longevity that they predict?
Without changes, like as is right now?
I mean, from what you know.
At the rate that they're changing and adapting the game and what we see, yes, absolutely.
It may just be like a yearly release kind of thing where, there's a little bit of stuff to do throughout the year if you want to check in, but it's not going to be like year one. And that saddens me because year one I thought was a lot of fun.
This is my prediction. I think year two is a growing pains year and that it's light on content because they're preparing to dump last gen and be really heavy and aggressive with the future because they've proven the success. Like, it's no doubt Destiny is a successful game. It's a AAA game that's successful.
Yeah, Taken King was amazing.
So they're now in a position where they have to for sure commit to making this a success for the rest of it. So I think year two is just it's a painful year to have to go through, but we have to with some light content. And my optimistic viewpoint is that year three is going to be like year two and year one combined, where we have these DLCs and also some free drops that happen.
That's what I would like to see.
Optimism.
That's what I would like to
see. That's fair. It's better, I think, being an optimist than a pessimist. especially about your favorite titles. You know, you can be like me and be super critical and the world can end every day, or you can be hopeful for the future. So I'm with you.
Last Mohican 9 at the Mohican 9 says, should going flawless in trials guarantee 320 gear?
Yes.
Ooh, yes. I think so.
No, I disagree.
Yeah.
What?
I disagree with your disagreement.
I'm half-half on it.
That's fine. That's what podcasts are for, is to have...
Wait. We're supposed to disagree? Damn it.
No, this is a circle jerk.
The problem is, if you give 320 gear out to people who go flawless in trials, they're going to have too much of an advantage, right? They're always going to have an advantage over everybody else.
Raids.
Well, you don't get 320 gear out of raids either.
Yeah, you do.
I agree with Briar in this respect. I think that the rewards for going flawless should be obvious, and you kind of already get the reward.
You get,
you know what I mean?
Stuff.
You get to go to Mercury. Right,
raids are to Iron Banner as Trials of Osiris is to Challenge Mode.
Challenge mode was a joke, dude.
No, I think Trials of Osiris should have a challenge mode where it's like only get to the lighthouse, but with sidearms.
I'm thinking access. No, what I'm saying is access to that gear. If you're a PvE player versus PvP, there is opportunities in PvE to get 320 gear guaranteed. There should be that in PvE, in PvP. That's my point.
I think that's fair. It's hard to argue this, man, because you're talking about balancing PvP. But to be really fair, the light level doesn't make
it really
that
doesn't.
Much
it
of
doesn't.
A difference.
But it does to the community, though. Like, you want to be that guy that has a 320 warlock, or, you know.
Yeah, but...
Okay, cool. Well, they can go. They can go be that guy.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
That's dismissive. I mean, come on, man. We're playing a loot based.
Just coming in hot.
No, we're playing a loot based game where rewards are what matters, man. Your character
honestly, the last time I actually felt excited about getting to max level was when Destiny dropped, when it first came out. Like, hitting level 30 was like, oh my god! And ever since after that, I'm like, well, I'm gonna hit it eventually.
I still haven't hit 320 on any of my characters.
My thing with the challenge modes is, or at least what Briar said, well, the guys that, you know, are getting there, you know, they're going to be even more decked out. Well, the guys that are getting there are already going to be getting there.
Yeah, but should we give them more of an advantage?
Should we be making it more
okay,
difficult?
Okay, so they've already
got
the skills.
People?
Should we give them the gear, too?
The American way, Briar.
Does...
Yeah, man.
Well, then, on the inverse, what if someone finally gets to the lighthouse for the very first time and fucking grats, you get a piece of shit hand cannon
at
310?
That's my point.
No, you get the
artifact.
Because
that's what I've been experiencing.
That's your one time to get to the... Your buddies have been grinding Trials of Osiris, and man, you finally made it. And you finally got that... You know, 8-9-0 card, and you get to the lighthouse, and you get a 311, you know, inward lamp, and you're like, what the?
Awesome.
Why should I have thought that this is supposed to be some pinnacle of achievement when all I got to do was have an extended cutscene to get to go get a little bit more loot?
You know why, Pat? Because you did it with friends.
No, that's what matters.
That's what friends are for.
Well, the core problem is. And is the RNG, man.
I'm sorry.
That's the core problem. Oh, you know what I mean? Because you're not necessarily talking about like should it be guaranteed 320 gear. It's like, well, like why is being guaranteed 320 gear a thing in the first place? Like, shouldn't it be if you finish trials on flawless, you get like a token and you can redeem something of value, not have be like, well, there's a chance I can get 320 gear, or there's a chance I can get, you know, utterly destroyed here.
Like, oh, I know. You could buy a microtransaction that buffs your chance at 320 gear.
Oh.
Did you guys ever see when EA first released Premium, what the community response from the Battlefield side was? They like started taking, like they took a picture and one was going around in Destiny, but like Premium was like $60. It was like $120 game for all the DLC.
I bought it.
Yeah. And people were going around being like, well, it's, I didn't think you knew this, but with Premium, you can forego that 99 cents reload. So every time you reload, it's a dollar. You didn't know about that? Oh, okay. You want to load in a little bit faster? That's $5. And they just went to like the deep end on it. So I think a lot of people, I saw a picture going around the Destiny community too. A lot of people are looking at it, like from the slippery slope fallacy. And some people are feeding into that heavily. They're like, well, you know, spark a light. What's next? Obviously, you know, guaranteed gear drops, 320 helmets, you know, the game plays itself for $100, something like that.
Man, that's going to make my Twitch stream so much easier.
I know. Right? I'm going to go eat lunch. Why don't you just go? I'm going to drop one of these consumable. Play it.
Like, sub, donate, bye.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. There was a button like that in one of the MMOs that I remember where you could literally just press
this.
No, it was not in WoW. There were bots that you could download that would do that, but then you would get ban hammered.
You can get them in almost any farm bots.
There's farm bots, but like there was a legitimate thing where you press this button and it will automatically do stuff for you. Like you need to run from here to here, and it'll run to there. Or you can say, hey, I need to go here and start killing stuff there, and it would go there and just start killing stuff for you. Like, you just go AFK.
Didn't somebody do that with a loot cave where they just rubber band
this guy wanted to level his Titan in vanilla, and so he went to the Dark Beyond mission. And he actually like had a servo, on his servo attached to a rubber band on his, Xbox controller that would pull it. So he would, melee. And then he also made it, cause he didn't know like what exactly would cause you to go AFK. So he programmed in stuff to make it like melee at different rates that never repeated. And then he's like, well, what if it's also based on how much you move your controller? Because you're going to be moving it some. So then he, like, put it on a certain angle so when the servo would trigger, it would also cause the controller to wobble around a bunch. It was the best. Wow. People were like, oh, no, I just went AFK at the Luke Cage. Like, nah, I programmed this thing and then attached it to my controller to level my Titan.
There's a guy who went and got one of those fallen bikes that has the, you know, the shooters
on it. Yeah, the pikes. I remember
that. Yeah, the pikes, and he parked it basically on Venus in front of a room that just would spawn enemies, mm-hmm. and just rubber banded the trigger down and just had it go for hours. And he was doing it from boats of light. And he said he got like, you know, something like 400 or 500 boats of light just from like leaving it there.
Oh my God. Oh. That's awesome. I don't know why he didn't.
We don't condone any of that, right? On this podcast.
I'd say that's pro strats right there.
That's the MLG.
Dude, how do you think I get all mine? I don't actually play this game. I just make it look like I play this game.
Who plays Destiny?
There could
anymore?
Be some backlash.
You know, people still play this. There could
be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bots. Fun bots.
The Bowman at Big D Johns says, "How do you feel?
Yo, Big D.
How do you feel about the rewards from Vanguard Strikes?
They're fine.
Three of coins makes it worth it."
Well, I'm just talking about without even three of coins. They're fine.
Yeah, I kind of like them.
You get
the special rewards out of like specific bosses, so you can farm specific bosses, which I think was a great addition in the Taken King. I love
going in solo and meeting new people.
Yeah, that's cool.
That is.
That's the best rewards.
Yeah.
That's the best reward.
No, stop Destiny it. Middle. I'm just saying, like, you go in there and you run across people that are good teammates, and then, you know, it's all this nonverbal stuff where, you know, like, they revive you, and then you revive them, and then all of a sudden...
You start sending them messages, and then you get into a party together.
Netflix and chill.
All of a sudden, you're putting your keys in a fishbowl, you don't know what happened to your pants.
Whoa, Briar. I don't know how you play Vanguard Strikes, but I play them with my pants on.
That's a bold-faced lie, and you know it.
I know. Only when I'm streaming.
Nightfall Strikes, I think, is a problem.
Nightfalls is, that's what I thought you said initially, and that's a joke. Yeah, I got the Smolder on two of my characters. The Smolder rocket launcher.
Oh, the rocket
launcher. That with the round that is so slow, you can actually see it flying through the sky.
You can run fast.
you can shoot it and outrun it. Yeah. No, I got two Smolders and a Vanguard Ghost Shell.
That is terrible.
Well, congratulations. Mm-hmm.
No, the Ghost Shell is bad. Mm-hmm. That's
yeah. What did you guys get?
I haven't run them in weeks. I think the last time I ran a strike was with Tefty for... Mm-hmm. Like the Nightfall.
I got 19 strange coins, a ghost shell, and then a thing I dismantled. So in total, I got 6 legendary marks and 19 strange coins.
That's pretty good.
I got an emote that I had not purchased yet.
Ooh, that's nice.
I was actually happy about it. I was like, well, you know, I didn't spend money on this, so.
Yeah, it's real world money. There you go.
Yeah, that was cash. True. Cash money right there.
It's like I can tell you, if I were to start running the Nightfall on my Xbox every week, which I probably should, if I start getting emotes there, God help me.
I love right. emotes. I love them.
Right, three more questions? What do you think? Three more questions?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're running around 2 hours here. Times Vengeance at the MQ9 Reaper says, do you think PvP matchmaking is now some type of skill-based matchmaking? We talked about this earlier.
We talked about this earlier, but yeah. TLDR,
there's definitely
been
a change.
There's something's wonky with the matchmaking. We don't know what it is, but I don't like it. Fix it.
That fix may be bring players back to Destiny, which might happen after, you know, there will be an influx of new players after Christmas.
I think that as well as Sparrow Racing League ending.
That's true too. So, you know, if you see those blueberries out there, low level blueberries, maybe you want to pay a little extra attention to those guys and say, hey, you know, because if you want this game to survive, it's going to take community members.
Buy your Spark of Light today, Guardian. $30. You can be 25.
Need to max out the Defender class? $30.
I want all those Sparrow Racing League cannon fodder guys back in Crucible, please.
Yes, please. Mr. Water Balloon at Mr. Water Balloon says, what missing storylines are you hoping would be addressed in the next expansion?
Oh, God.
A stranger.
Hey, Wally, I'll let you do this one because I have no idea.
Well, like, you know, the stranger, for one, makes sense. I think that's obviously the most requested. Who is the next big bad guy? Where's Osiris? Where's Saint 14? What is the speaker doing in the storyline? You know, does your guardian actions actually matter? Where's the queen? Where's the queen's brother? Is the reef going to actually do anything? Are the factions actually going to matter? I mean, yeah, you can go on. I can go on for an hour. Some people play Destiny for the FPS, obviously, right? But I think the big thing that at least attracted me and I have to owe all my success to for my YouTube channel is the story. And like when I do lore videos now, it's like, oh, you know, Oryx is a big bad guy. Like they're not interesting stories at all. Like Oryx, the backstory behind the Hive is incredibly interesting. The problem is that it's taken out of the game. It's a completely different experience that, you know, like if you were to watch Lord of the Rings and you know, read the books, they're different experiences to a certain extent, you know, and it shouldn't be like that. It should be like, I want to know about the backstory of the Hive in the game, or I want to know about the Battle of Twilight Gap. Let me relive the Battle of Twilight Gap to get the Gjallarhorn or something. You know, there's a lot of open-ended creativity they can apply with the story that also helps gameplay. It's not just put it in the game as some codex and that's it. So, yeah.
Well said.
Yeah. I agree. John Walters at Crouch in Goddard. Crouch in Goddard. That's. I don't know about that one.
I got her. Don't worry, guys. I got her. There you go.
People.
Get alligator and go. Got no problem now. We got her.
Don't worry, guys. Let's get
find
going.
All this
I got
greatly
it.
Greatly offensive. Bless y'all's heart.
People are talking. I'm sorry. People are talking about the content drought.
Yep,
what's keeping your attention right now, and what are you most excited about? When The Taken King came out, I was really focused on PvE. That content for me is really drying up. I still like to raid during the week. It's still fun for me to raid, especially with my raid clan, and then I do it twice a week on stream as well, and I really like doing that. But really, right now, I'm transitioning more toward PvP because I neglected it, I don't know, for 2 or 3 months, frankly. I got, you know, back into it, and now I just jump on and I play PvP only, and that's not something I was doing when The Taken King was fresh and new. So to me, that's a cycle that keeps happening. It happened with Vanilla Destiny. It happened again when Dark Below dropped. I got big on PvE when Dark Below dropped and then, you know, transitioned into PvP. Then, you know, again with, you know, the next, you know, it just is a continuing cycle for me as I just kind of PvE, then transition to PvP and then back to PvE when the next content drops.
as it dries up, I get more and more towards the PvP side and complain about all the weapons that are overpowered. And, I do. I mean, I'm fully aware that I can, like on stream, I bitch and moan all the time about the things that are problematic in PvP, yet I still play it. So,
Pope?
I take breaks and I enjoy, I do Destiny a lot less than I used to. That's really because there's a lot less to do. But I've learned to not burn myself out because it sucks the enjoyment out of it. So I play other games, and I've been playing Fallout and a lot of Black Ops 3, a lot of zombies. PvP for me is where, you know, Trials of Osiris. Without Trials of Osiris, I think I would be playing Destiny a lot less than I already do, simply because I feel like Trials of Osiris is the most competitive or most fun for me. I can't stand regular PvP right now. And yeah, so that's where I'm at. I really enjoy it.
I've never found another game mode in any PvP game that is like Trials of Osiris. It's something unique.
If Iron Banner was not laggy, I would probably enjoy it more, but I just feel like I have a hard time enjoying games that are, you know, connecting with people that just you know they're bouncing all over the place. So
I'm telling you, 12 consoles connected with 2002 or whatever, when Halo 2 peer-to-peer connections came out. I think it's Halo 2 connections with 12 consoles, and that's why it's so laggy. Like I completely agree. I don't like playing those game modes.
It feels like playing Halo 2 again. It really does.
Let's be honest. Let's call it what it is.
That's it for Twitter questions.
Right.
Nailed it.
Can I go for a title of this, maybe?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Ooh. 50th podcast, The Gloves Come Off? I don't know.
How about somewhere. This? The 50th podcast or the 48th one where they bitch about Thorn?
I like it.
Love it. That's even better.
Or the 50th podcast, Jesus, how much range do you have on your conspiracy theory, D?
Or the 50th podcast.
Maybe not as good.
The 50th podcast. This has been Patrick Casey with Planet Destiny on the podcast. Thank you guys for listening. If you would like to find more of me, you can go to the YouTube channel, or you can just go to Planet Destiny. You can probably find me more on there.
I'm Briar Rabbit. You can find me on Twitter at The Briar Rabbit. You can find me on my YouTube channel, The Briar Rabbit Channel, or streaming for Planet Destiny.
I am Tefty Teft. You can talk to me at Teft on Twitter. You can catch the streams that I do for Planet Destiny, twitch.tv/planet_destiny, and check out my own Twitch channel as well, twitch.tv/teftyteft.
And this has been Pope Bear. You can find me streaming occasionally on the Planet Destiny Twitch channel and as well on Twitter at Pope Bear. Come hang out.
This has been Sir Wallen. You can find me doing more videos on the Planet Destiny channel.
Nothing else there, Wally? Wow.
I think you just dropped the mic. Wally. You dropped the mic and walked away.
No, but like, you know, you guys do your thing, right? And I want to be funny at the end, but I understand that, you know, I can't always be funny. You can't force it. So if I don't have anything to say, I'm just going to shut my mouth.
No. You should have used that kind of logic, you know, maybe an hour and a half ago then.
No! We'll have a discussion after this podcast.
At the end of the podcast, will someone please call the burn ward for Sir Wallen? Thank you. We'll see you guys next week for the 51st.
Got it.
Yeah.
Red Bar Edition.
Red Bar. There it is.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, it's later, guys. Bye. I'm ending it.